The Beatitudes are some of the most powerful and lasting words ever spoken. For two millennia, they've inspired poets, prophets, mystics, and revolutionaries. But what do they really mean? How have people throughout history understood these paradoxical blessings? And what might they say to us today? Join Sycamore Creek for an 8-week series exploring how the Beatitudes have been interpreted and lived across the centuries. Ancient words, timeless hope, and a world in need of blessing.
Said, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled." As we explore that saying of Jesus today, let me tell you a little bit about Mary Francesca Cabrini. She was at one point an elementary school teacher in Italy. She then decided to form a new religious order called the Institute of Salesian Missionaries of the Sacred Heart. Now notice, part of the name of that order involves missionaries. Some Catholic leaders at that time objected to that term because missionaries had always been men. But Cabrini stood her ground. As Rebecca Eklund writes and quotes Cabrini as saying, Cabrini pointed out that if the mission of announcing the Lord's resurrection to the apostles had been entrusted to Mary Magdalene, well, she saw no reason why the same mission could not now be entrusted to her and her sisters. Cabrini won the argument. And in 1889, Cabrini and her sisters headed to the United States to New York City. They joined 100,000 Italian immigrants already present in that city. And over the next 3 decades, she founded hospitals and orphanages and schools in New York and several other major American cities. These places served Italian immigrants and all those who were poor and rejected. A modern-day missionary sister, Mary Louise Sullivan, noted about Cabrini, "Few women of her time undertook comparable, arduous, and extensive travels or acted as agents of change in a male-dominated society." A New York judge praised Cabrini, saying, "Her accomplishments put to shame those men whose bigotry helps raise the cry of intolerance toward the immigrant." You see, at that time, Italians were considered undesirable aliens. At the turn of the century, when Mary Francesca Cabrini arrived in the United States, and Italians were hated and feared and discriminated against. And you might ask, why? Like, you know, what did the Italians do? Well, they had a different language, a different culture, a Catholic faith, and well, people in the U.S. didn't like those differences. The Italians had negative stereotypes associating them with crime, and so people were worried they would bring crime with them to the United States. Many Italian immigrants came from southern Italy and Sicily, which were poorer regions compared to northern Italy and the rest of the United States. So the Italians were looked down on by people in the United States. Finally, southern Italians and Sicilians were often viewed as racially ambiguous. They were neither clearly white nor black, which created confusion and further discrimination due to systemic racism. Now, overall, at that time in the United States, the Italians were treated horribly. And these Italians and all the others like them were the people that Mother Cabrini devoted her life to defending, to loving, and to serving. Cabrini has been described as mother of the immigrant, servant of the poor, consoler of the sick, guardian of the orphan, teacher of the little ones, and friend of the laborer. Mary Francesca Cabrini hungered and thirsted for justice. She served and lived with the hungry and downtrodden and hurting, and her life points us to the beauty and complexity of Jesus' words, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled." Today, we are continuing in our series, Paradoxical Blessings. We're calling this series Paradoxical Blessings because Jesus holds things in tension in his teachings that just don't seem to go together. This series is also continuing our series of series, looking at the Sermon on the Mount, by taking a deep dive into the introduction of the Sermon on the Mount, the Beatitudes. And to again help us to take a look at these paradoxical blessings, we're using the Beatitudes Through the Ages, this book by Rebecca Eklund. Her book is going to help us to approach the Beatitudes through the lens of the history of Christians and how they've approached the Beatitudes. It's literally a summary of approaches to the Beatitudes through the ages. Now, I shared with you a little already about the life of Mary Francesca Cabrini. I gotta tell you, I'm really inspired by her life and by all she accomplished and worked towards. She clearly hungered and thirsted for righteousness. And her example, well, it makes me want to hunger and thirst for righteousness, which I would broadly define righteousness as making things right. It makes me want to make things right. I'm curious who's inspired you toward righteousness, toward making things right. Maybe it's been a parent or a teacher or a pastor or a famous person or some historical person who isn't famous really, like Mary Francesca Cabrini, or maybe it's a friend, or maybe it's Jesus himself, or whoever it might be. Here's our first question for discussion. Who has inspired you to hunger and thirst for righteousness, and how did they do so? Let's take a moment and let's talk about that. Again, Jesus said, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled." I'm going to start with righteousness, and then we'll talk about hunger and thirst. And finally, we'll get to being filled. Now, to set the table for understanding this beatitude, it's helpful to look at the original Greek that the New Testament was written in. So the Greek word that's translated as righteousness is diakosyne. I think that's it. I looked up the pronunciation guide online, and I gotta be honest with you, I still can't pronounce that word very well. You try it. Diakosyne. I don't know. There are a range of meanings possible for this Greek word that I have trouble pronouncing, and they include righteousness, justice, justification, and even piety. Now, in the New Testament as a whole, righteousness is often a characteristic of God. And God can both consider us human beings to be righteous, and God can make people righteous. Now, the language I use there is nuanced. You know, God can consider us righteous and make us righteous. There's a huge theological discussion there about human righteousness, and I'm just gonna neatly sidestep that today to focus on what righteousness is. To be righteous is this, according to the dictionary. It's morally right or justifiable. That's righteous. So to have righteousness is to have morally right or justifiable actions. Now, one challenge with the word righteousness, well, it's our negative associations with it. And that's a problem that we need to address. As I'm talking about being righteous and talking about righteousness, you're probably thinking about self-righteousness. Self-righteousness. So let me be clear. Self-righteousness does not equal righteousness. These are two very different things. Self-righteousness involves moral superiority and judgment and intolerance. And well, that's incredibly different than being morally right or justifiable. So there's no superiority in righteousness. There's no judgment. There's no intolerance. In fact, righteousness is actually equated with justice. These two things are closely linked. And that's totally different than self-righteousness, which we associate with injustice. Most English translations translate Jesus' words into English with the word righteousness. But justice can be also be used as an English translation for diakosyne, this word I can't pronounce. And in light of righteousness, well, I might offer my own definition of justice as this. It's making things morally right or justifiable. Do you see how closely linked justice can be with righteousness? Justice makes things right. It involves fairness and equity and social justice for the vulnerable. You might imagine standing before God someday. We'll all stand before God someday. And your status before God will be determined by your righteousness. How would you show that righteousness? By your actions on behalf of others. That's how justly you acted. Now, I've shared with you before that one of the things I love about Sycamore Creek is our seeking of justice together. We're seeking justice through racial equity. We're seeking justice for the LGBTQ community. We're seeking justice for disabled persons. We're seeking justice for the poor. And as I seek justice together with you all, that is righteousness. My righteousness is shown by my actions on behalf of others. If I talk a good game, but I don't act for justice on behalf of others, I'm not righteous. So as we approach Jesus' words, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. We're going to hold the themes of righteousness and justice together in tension. We hold these things together in tension for several reasons. Now, one reason is because the story this beatitude tells is about human and divine agency. It's about what we are doing as humans for righteousness and for justice. And it's about what God is doing for righteousness and for justice. It's both. There's another tension with righteousness and justice in that this beatitude deals with our longings, both our bodily longings and our spiritual longings. We all have physical needs that need to be met. And we have deeper spiritual needs to be met. Righteousness and justice, they involve both. You know, people, they stop by the Potterville campus all the time for food. If I'm working in Potterville on a sermon like this one I'm giving right now, I never know who will stop by or what they'll want. At one point, a woman stopped by in her vehicle with her dog, and in talking to her, I found out she had stopped by in need of food. Now, thankfully, we have the Potterville food pantry where I am right now, and I was able to help her out with food. So as I helped her out with food, I discovered she'd been living out of her car for 7 years. 7 years! Well, that helped guide me in what food I had to share with her because she didn't have a way to cook it. And the longer I talked with her, the more I realized it wasn't just food this woman needed. She was lonely and isolated. Her one companion was her dog, and her dog lived with her in her car. And she knew it was a tough situation to be a dog. So I invited her into our church fellowship hall with her dog, and her dog ran around and got to be a dog. And well, the food I gave her didn't start that woman crying, but she started sobbing as she watched her dog sniff around the hall. I was able to hear about her longing for a more permanent home. I heard about her longing for community and for relationships. I heard about her longing for connection with God. I offered to pray with her, and she started crying again, and she told me how meaningful it was to connect with a person who is kind and compassionate and pointed her to a God who is kind and compassionate. Bodily longings and spiritual longings, well, they exist together in tension, needing to be filled, and we have both together. Now, a final tension to navigate with righteousness and justice is that this beatitude is about God's justice and about our human obedience, and really about the limits of human goodness. You see, there's only so much being filled that can happen right now. There are limits to human goodness. I both helped that woman living in her car with her dog, and well, I couldn't repair all that was broken in that situation. This beatitude is so hopeful. And there's this disconnect with how filled we can all be in this life. It's all mixed together. It's both and. So let's pause here a moment to reflect on the tensions that I just mentioned within righteousness and justice, between our bodily longings and our spiritual longings. These two things are intermingled, just like the woman living out of her car helped me to realize. Sometimes when I'm facing something in life, you know, maybe it's like a car repair, it's really more than just a car repair. It's the limits of my abilities. I can't repair that car myself. It's the limits of my finances. It's my network of support that all come into play. I might need a ride or help from someone to get to the repair shop or home and have someone help me navigate the repair. You see, my immediate needs also have deeper needs mingled in with them. So let's pause to think about this before we move on to hunger. Here's our next question for discussion. When did your immediate need also have deeper needs associated with it? Let's take a moment and let's wrestle with that and let's talk about it. We started with righteousness, which also involves justice. And there are tensions within justice and righteousness. So as we navigate these tensions, let's take next a look at hunger. So in terms of hunger, well, people have wrestled through the centuries with whether Jesus is talking about actual hunger, like for the food around me, or a spiritual hunger, like for meaning and for purpose and for the divine. Now, remember, a theme in the Beatitudes is similarities and differences with other parts of Scripture, especially Luke. So most modern scholars find Luke, his account, his beatitude about Jesus, about actual hunger, like physical hunger. So if we read Luke, Luke reads, "Blessed are you who are hungry now, for you will be filled. Woe to you who are full now, for you will be hungry." In contrast, most modern scholars think Matthew refers to a more metaphorical or spiritual hunger. Again, Matthew reads, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled." But it's really not that simple. And throughout history, Bible scholars have wrestled with the link between actual physical hunger and a metaphorical or a spiritual hunger. For example, one of the early church fathers, Augustine, associated the Beatitudes with petitions in the Lord's Prayer. He matched hungering and thirsting for righteousness with God giving us our daily bread. Augustine thought, "Give us our daily bread," was primarily spiritual, but he also considered it could mean several other things, including a literal hunger satisfied by that which is necessary for our body. That's food. Now, "give us our daily bread" could also mean the sacrament of the Lord's body in communion. Finally, "give us our daily bread" could also mean the bread of the Word of God, the Bible. That's what led to the name of the devotional that maybe some of you have read, Our Daily Bread. "Give us our daily bread" can mean lots of different things, and so can hungering for righteousness. Now, much later in church history, Thomas Aquinas, a doctor of the church, a theologian, a philosopher, he's associated each beatitude with a virtue and also a vice that virtue opposed. So Aquinas understood this beatitude as the cardinal virtue of justice, and he placed it in opposition to greed. So virtue is justice, vice is greed. And we might think of a hunger and thirst for material goods as greed, which can produce a trampling of justice. Now, however we view hunger, what most scholars have found is that those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, well, they're often literally hungry. They have physical needs that aren't being met. And thus often this beatitude has been linked with the practice of fasting. Now, fasting, thought of this way in terms of hunger for righteousness and justice, it's a sort of corrective for our bent toward greed, especially when it comes to food. So we might fast to feast spiritually on God and God's presence. We might fast to support others with the resources we voluntarily give up through fasting. And this idea around fasting, well, it begins to create a connection between hungering for righteousness and concrete acts of mercy and justice, including feeding the hungry. Now, I've not had the opportunity to do this, but imagine with me, you're going to a restaurant. You're buying a meal to take out, and on your way out of the restaurant, you see someone who is hungry. So you give their meal to them, and you skip that meal that you had planned to eat. That's a very kind and compassionate act of righteousness, and it's fasting. It's a concrete act of mercy and righteousness. And then, rather than rushing off to get yourself a replacement meal, it's sitting in your hunger with that person to find out more about what systems are in place that are keeping them hungry. Your hunger in that moment is a physical reminder of the other person's hunger. It's a manifestation of something that is wrong in our world. And in this case, it leads to working with a hungry person to dismantle those systems that keep them hungry and to find a way where they have better access to food. That's a concrete action of righteousness and justice. So there's for sure actual hunger addressed through this beatitude. But when Jesus says, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled," most scholars throughout history also interpret Jesus as pointing us toward a longing that we all have for God. Christians throughout history cite texts like the psalmist who wrote, "As the deer pants for streams of water, so my soul pants for you, my God." My soul thirsts for God, for the living God. There are also other New Testament books that view hunger and thirst as metaphorical, such as John's account of Jesus' life and ministry, where Jesus himself is referred to as the bread from heaven, the bread of life, and the living water. This metaphorical hunger, it's a hunger for God where we can only be filled through God and not through the things of this world like money or glory or luxury or pleasure even. Now, as we hunger and thirst for justice, this beatitude also has an implicit condemnation of the unjust. There's a yearning for God, yes, but there's also a yearning that we all have for justice. There's a longing for God's vindication in the face of evil and injustice. We want things to be made right. And this beatitude is a reminder that yearning for God above all else includes a yearning for God's justice, for vindication of the oppressed. Prophets in the Bible called for things to be made right. There's this long strand of the prophetic tradition in the Bible that calls for God's righteousness to be manifest in human societies. And when we look and we use this prophetic lens to look at the hunger in this beatitude, we can conclude that Jesus blesses those who hunger for the realization of God's goodness in the world. As the prophet Isaiah puts it, "Is this not the fast that I choose? To loose the bonds of injustice, to undo the straps of the yoke, to let the oppressed go free, and to break every yoke. Is it not to share your bread with the hungry and bring the homeless poor into your house? When you see the naked, to cover them, and not to hide yourself from your own kin." There's a clear connection between those who hunger, literally, and those who hunger for justice. So let me repeat, Jesus blesses those who hunger for the realization of God's goodness in the world. Or put another way, the hungry are hungry for food and for the justice that would keep right the imbalances that keep them hungry. When I first started attending Sycamore Creek about 19 years ago, I was introduced to this idea of fasting, and I laughed. I thought there was no way I could do it. Now I'm not saying fasting from food is for everyone. And for some people, it's not an option. But for me, the reason I thought I couldn't do it is just because how much I love to eat. And I love to eat a lot of food. Well, after my initial skepticism, I felt convicted to try fasting. And it was a really powerful experience. It was hard. It was a real sacrifice for me. And it made me much more aware of and empathetic with those who are hungry. And that experience brought to the forefront for me the injustice of hunger. It made me want to be part of the solution to hunger and to help with both charity and with justice to work to end hunger. A recurring theme for the Beatitudes is how justice happens, how are hunger and thirst met. But before we get to that, let's pause for another question for discussion. I just shared with you my experience of fasting and how it changed my perspective on hunger. It's often our personal experiences that help us to realize injustices in our world. So here's our next question for discussion. When has your own experience compelled you to work toward justice? Let's take a moment and let's talk about that. Beatitudes balance human and divine agency. God does bring justice for the hungry, and so do human beings. It is both. It is yes, and we recognize that there are limits to what we can accomplish as humans. There are certain things that only God can do. And faith in God compels us to work toward justice and to right the imbalances of our world. If one longs for God's justice to be done, then one will take whatever small steps one can to bring about that justice. Listen to those who are hungry. Protest greed in our society. Stand in solidarity with those who are hungry for justice. Share your resources with those who have fewer resources, whatever those resources might be. Both God and humans are part of filling the hungry with justice and making things right. But often justice and righteousness, well, they can feel like out there concepts. They relate to the world around us and how messed up it is all around us. And well, we'd be missing something today if we just focused out there and not on ourselves and our own inner lives. Leo Tolstoy wrote, "And yet in our world, everybody thinks of changing humanity, but nobody thinks of changing himself or herself." And this brings us back again to righteousness. If we hunger for righteousness, part of that longing for God's righteousness is not that it would just be manifest in the world around us out there, but that would also be present in our hearts in here. And in this sense, personal righteousness and acts of justice are intimately connected. A hunger for justice, a hunger for righteousness. It permeates our own lives and our own actions. To be blessed is not to only passively receive something from God. It's an act of working out. And the Reformation theologian Martin Luther viewed this beatitude as very active. He said, "The righteous and blessed person is the one who continually works and strives with all his might to promote the general welfare and the proper behavior of everyone, and who helps to maintain and support this by word and deed, by precept and example." Do you see the action there? By word and by deed, we work out justice and righteousness both within us and around us. It's not just the world that needs to be made right. It's me. And personal righteousness isn't just received from God. It's worked out. I don't become righteous just by praying and by reading my Bible. I become righteous by praying and by reading my Bible and by doing actions of justice and mercy and righteousness. The longing in this beatitude is both an inner, a personal holiness, and an outer justice in the world component. We have a desire to be right with God and to be like God that reflects holiness. And at the same time, we have a desire to be in right relationship with our fellow human beings, to recognize the rights of each person, and especially the despised or oppressed. That's social justice. And these two things go hand in hand. We need both. And as these two things go hand in hand, personal holiness and social justice, so too do physical and spiritual longings. Hungering for justice for the hungry, longing for a world in which there are no more children who starve to death because they have no bread, fits with a longing for God's kingdom to come with its abundant banquet table laid for all. Which brings us finally to being filled. Again, Jesus said, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled." Jesus ties together blessing and being filled. And the Greek word here for blessing, again, is makarios. And it can be translated as blessed or happy or flourishing are or congratulations too. And this word makarios it's both descriptive. It's something that is happening, and it's prescriptive. It's something that we are a part of making happen. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. The blessing is that they will be filled. This is good news. It's a literal and it's a spiritual fulfillment. It's the contentment of eating a piece of bread. And it's the sustenance of God's presence with us. God fills the hungry both now in part and perfectly in the life to come. You see, the really real is here right now. The reign of God is present. And this is such good news. This is such comfort. And it's not fully here. Not yet. So let's roll up our sleeves. Let's be inspired like Sister Cabrini to make this world a better place for everyone, especially those on the margins. Let's seek God together as we hunger and thirst for righteousness. Let's receive God's goodness and justice and righteousness. And let's work together to make this world a more righteous and just place for everyone. We can do this with the hope of Jesus. We will be filled. Amen.